This is the Canucks Central Postgame Show.
For more than 2.5 minutes, Bogosian and Merrill more than 90 seconds. The Sushi shoots from the line. Rebound for Pettersson. The DeBrus scores. The puck sat loose in front of the net. Pettersson tried to jam it on target, but got it across to Jake DeBrusk, who scores his team-leading 11th of the year. Boldy on the right wing, tried to throw it to the goal. It deflects into the slot. Pettersson throws the rebound. It comes to Milton. He scores!
With instant reaction from the players and coaches.
Rossi bobbled the puck at center. It's stolen. It's a 2-on-0 for the Canucks. Shooter ahead. In a load. Besser hit the goalpost. And it bounces back the other way. 2-on-1 for the Wild. Marco Rossi has Kaprizov with him. Rossi to Kaprizov. He scores! Hit the goalpost on a 2-on-0 for the Canucks at one end of the ice. The Wild come back the other way, and Kirill Kaprizov scores his 16th of the year, beating Kevin Lankinen from the right circle. Minnesota wins 3-2 tonight in overtime.
Have your say on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Canucks, a tough loss in Minnesota to end their six-game road trip. They go 4-1-1 with a 3-2 overtime loss against the Minnesota Wild. Man, they deserve better to finish this game off. Great effort in the third period, come up just short. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Satyar Shah with Bick Nizar. And as always, get your thoughts in to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. And honestly, Bick, I think this was the Canucks' best effort on the road trip, considering the degree of difficulty with the opponent, the last game of a road trip. We know the injuries they've gone through. And it's one thing to hang on. It's one thing to fight and all that. And we'll get to Randy coming up in a second to break this game down. But Minnie ties it early in the third period. And you're like, okay, you know, last game of a road trip, 2-2. It's going to be tough, right? Like, this is where Minnesota takes over and kind of hang on for dear life. And the Canucks just took the game over.
I thought they really stifled Minnesota in the final frame, right? Mm-hmm. And this is that difference between, you know, a game like the Rangers game 2 weeks ago where the third period effort wasn't really that strong, and there's the deciding factor. Again, there's a goal here in the early part of this period, but the effort was consistent the whole way through. And, you know, like, that's kind of what you want to see, just constantly moving their feet, constantly forechecking, constantly keeping the puck in the other end of the ice, and, you know, earning their opportunities to create chances. And it was the type of road game that you want to see.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they, for the most part, kept things to the outside in the battle tonight and just came up short in overtime. And let's bring Randeep into the conversation. And I know a lot of Canucks, two moments that really stuck out in this game as far as things not going the Canucks' way. One was Sherwood getting a high hit from Joel Eriksson-Ek. And I thought maybe that would have been, you know, the most obvious miscall of the night. And then Connor Garland gets tripped by Kaprizov early during that 5-minute overtime and no call on the play. And, you know, the team exchanges some chances, but there was a bit of everything in that overtime, Randy.
Yeah, for once, guys, we got an exciting overtime again. It's like the old days when this thing started. It was back and forth action. It was either team could have won. And your point about the Kaprizov trip on Garland, it stings because it takes away his scoring chances. Also stings because he's the guy that ends up scoring the goal against Vancouver. So it's a bit of a double whammy in that regard. But, you know, looking at that game and the way that they played, that's a valiant effort against the best team in the NHL right now based on points percentage, and to put in that effort, and that, we're not talking about hanging on for dear life. We're talking about going toe-to-toe in a physical matchup. There was some greasiness from both teams in this game. Not only did Vancouver take that, they dished it out as well. So for me, this was, you know, it's easy to say, okay, you know, a step up in intensity feels almost playoff-like. Like, this one had edge in it where I was like, all right, neither team's backing down. They're playing a physical brand, and I think Vancouver can go away from that game to say, hey, we gave it our best effort. If that doesn't hit the post, Vancouver's celebrating a 3-2 win instead of Minnesota, and they did not back down physically, and which is exactly what you want. And they brought the defensive effort today as well, guys. So I thought it was a very, very strong game from the Canucks.
Yeah, that last bit, just talking about the defensive effort, right? Like they skated the whole game, right? And made it challenging up the ice throughout the whole game and certainly in that third period. But, you know, by and large, like made things easy for Kevin Lankinen to find and see. And like that's the type of performance we talk about. Like, oh, okay, if we think that's what the Canucks' identity is supposed to be, at least we see it from time to time.
Well, you mentioning skating early on, like in the first period of this game, you could see that they were skating hard. They were providing back pressure. They were getting back. They were communicating well and not having those breakdowns where maybe you're pushing it through the neutral zone and you know, the forward doesn't come back to cover for D. Like, they didn't have issues like that. And I thought, you know, throughout the game, I think Pew Suter today, and we've talked a lot about his goal scoring, but guys, active stick, second efforts in the offensive zone, just extending possession time. And it's not going to be noted because there were not bone-crunching hits or there wasn't, you know, an attack that he created necessarily driving the net, but it was just that simple play of getting that stick in the passing lane, disrupting, and then him and Garland and Joshua can, at the very least, take some of the pressure off his teammates and they can go for a change and set up the next line. So I thought they all worked hard, but for me, I you know, we've been focusing so much on certain players and their goal-scoring prowess. I thought Pew Suter, from just a work ethic perspective, and not only him, but he stood out for the right reasons. And Nils Höglander as well, guys. This guy's been in the discussion a lot this season. You know, there's a couple of games he was hovering around 6, 7, 8 minutes of ice time. Today he gets 13.5, drew a penalty, looked like he had a great scoring chance in the second period. Where he attacked the gap like AP in his prime in Minnesota. So this was something that, you know, I thought was a strong game for a number of players. And Sat, we talked about it pregame. You need your top line to do things, but you need your role players and your depth players to also provide something tonight. I felt they did.
Well, you know, we talk so much about the blue line, right? And, you know, a lot of concerns about the Canucks defense. And this was before, you know, Filip Hronek got injured. And tonight, you know, to be honest, I thought this was not anywhere near Quinn Hughes' best game. I thought he had some good moments, but on the ice for all three goals, and not that, you know, they're all his fault. There was one mix-up with Pettersson, of course, that led to the 1-1 goal initially in the second period. But it wasn't his best game. He spent time in his own zone, wasn't as clean, and he still did a lot of good things, obviously, on the power play, and there were moments he really played well. But tonight, to me, was a game really exemplified by the rest of the blue line and how they battled to ensure the Canucks were able to keep things, for the most part, to the outside in their own zone.
Yeah, and a couple of players that stand out specifically. I thought Carson Soucy brought a bit of a mean streak today where he was good with the puck. No giveaways as far as I can see with his game, which is more decisive from him. That's something that, you know, passes the eye test and you look back at the stats and say, all right, he was decisive. But there was also an element of not on my watch from Carson Soucy, right? There was battles in the corners. There's battles in front of the net. And that's the Carson Soucy you want, where he's got that edge to him. I think Vincent Desharnais, we talked about him pregame. All right, you know, we know what you can do in the PK, but can you do more of that in 5-on-5? Can you simplify your game? Are you limiting your giveaways? It wasn't a perfect game, but he was in the shooting lanes again. He was taking away opportunities, and that was so central to what Vancouver was doing tonight, guys. The middle of the ice was not there for Minnesota for the majority, and when it was, it closed up real quick with some big defensemen stepping in the way. I thought that was two of the guys that stood out to me. And of course, Noah Juulsen plays, what, 18 minutes, if I'm not mistaken. He was on the the receiving end of big hits. But I thought he played a pretty clean game. There's always going to be a couple of giveaways. There's one specifically on the left-hand side where it was a no-look feed that welcome pressure. That's one of the moments you can probably look back and say, all right, Juulsen probably wants that back. But what's the one thing we've heard from the organization, from the team? It's by committee. And tonight was a classic example where nobody did something extraordinary, right? Like, this wasn't like a Quinn Hughes masterclass, but it was everybody leaning in. And you're able to play that style of game. That was a strong effort by most players.
But even if something as simple of just, like, how do you respond, right? Like, Eric Branstrom had gotten elevated up the lineup, and so Carson Soucy's minutes were starting to get a bit depleted, right? Like, he played 15:49. So how do you respond? How do you build upon that? Now he's played 21, 18 the last two games. Tonight, Carson Soucy plays over 20 minutes. But again, like, this is how you're meant to respond. Your spot in the lineup gets challenged. and he's stepped up here these last couple of games, looking much better. Gets an assist tonight, obviously, plus one, 5 shot attempts throughout the course of the evening, 2 hits. It just looked like a far more regular Carson Soucy game that it just allows you to just kind of step back and breathe here and say, you know what, okay, if he's reclaiming a bit of form here, then suddenly, like, we don't have to go and be as desperate in the trade market at all.
For sure, and I thought a couple of areas, you know, I mentioned his mean streak, but I think there was also an element of, A, him skating the puck up the ice. He was a little bit more active on that front. There was a couple of moments where he actually led the attack. He makes a break up in the defensive zone, and then he's stepping up into that empty space. When he is doing that, he is confident. He is decisive, and that's the best Carson Soucy from a defense to offense point of view and perspective. The other thing I would say were not only him, but his teammates did a good job too, guys, was early on in this game especially, Minnesota was trying to pepper the net and trying to get deflections, trying to get rebounds, both from the left and right point. The Canucks did a good job of boxing out. They did a good job of wrapping up sticks. They did a good job of getting in those shooting lanes. So I think Soucy was strong on that front, but that goes for everybody where they're able to box out and say, all right, Lankanen's going to make the save. He generally gets the rebound, but if he doesn't, we're going to be there and we're going to make sure that nobody is able to pick up one of those rebounds. And they did a heck of a job. And you could see that early on in this game where it was pretty obvious what Minnesota was trying to do, but Vancouver didn't give him an inch.
Decisiveness was the word we used in the intermission as well in that DeBrusque goal, because it's quick off his stick for Carson Soucy, and he just puts into that spot. He sees DeBrusque heading towards the net and just creates that opportunity. So, you know, there's plenty to get through here this evening, but just that level of decisiveness of just either attacking up the ice or just putting the puck on net was huge to see for Carson Soucy.
No doubt, and I think that's also a understanding of, all right, every given night it can't be Quinn Hughes. And to your point, Sat, Quinn had a good game, but it's not the exceptional game that we've come to expect from him, which is probably pretty unrealistic, right? This is another 27 minutes for the Canucks defenseman. But other guys do have to step up. Other guys do have to, you know, have those moments in a game, whether that's offensively or defensively. And with Soucy, he was the first one to say it, you know, at practice, that he can play better. He was one of the individuals that was saying, Tyler Myers was saying that. Almost every single defenseman was saying that, but we all zeroed in on that pairing when they were together at that time. And as a veteran in this league, you want to make sure that you're able to right that wrong very, very quickly. And we all have bouts in confidence. And I think with Carson Soucy, before this road trip, it was clear that his confidence wasn't there. He wasn't comfortable carrying the puck. He wasn't winning puck battles. Tonight and the last few games, we're starting to see him kind of turn that into I'm getting into my rhythm. And, you know, I thought that play, not only his, but Brock Besser, if I'm not mistaken, he starts off that entire sequence, winning the puck at the blue line, starts that cycle and really hems in Minnesota on that play. Decisive from a few guys. And even though you lose that game, you pick up a point, you pick up 9 of 12 before this road trip started. If anybody would have offered that to the Vancouver Canucks fan base, they would have, you know, jumped over people to shake your hand for that deal. And the way that this team's been playing, even in a loss, I think they can be proud of it.
Yeah, and it was a really interesting game, right? Because if you look at it just from the shot totals, you look at it and be like, well, you know, the Canucks got outshot and most of the Canucks players were in the red as far as the shot differential goes. But where they excelled was they weren't really getting outchanced. The Canucks did a really good job of keeping things to the outside and then creating quality looks themselves. And if you kind of look at some of the underlying numbers for, high danger scoring chances, like, you know, the Garland line and the Pettersson line, they all created more chances than they gave up, and they were better as far as being dangerous goes. And I think that also kind of shows you that if you can play a clean game and keep things to the outside and not break, you can generate your own chances. And they did a good job of doing that tonight, despite especially the first half of the game, you know, being territorially behind the Minnesota Wild.
Yeah, if you look at the shot attempts chart, it looks like every line lost their matchup, but that's not the case to your point, right? Where that late goal, that Jake Middleton goal, kind of skews the goals for 5-on-5. But outside of that, you know, the top six for Vancouver did a good job in creating off the rush, and also just doing a strong job of containing Minnesota's top stars for the majority of this game. Kaprizov is going to get his, and he got his in overtime. We saw, you know, a little bit on that line with the Jake Middleton goal as well. They're going to bring the heat. They're going to create opportunities to score. But if you can replicate this, if you can have defense by committee, but be opportunistic, strike when the conditions are right for you. Not being reckless across the ice and taking chances and trying to hit on the counterattack and forcing the issue. But if you can play a patient game, guys, that's what we remember from last year. Remember, you know, at the beginning of the year, of course, they were shooting out the lights and the PDO was through the roof. But when Vancouver was really playing their game, it was, all right, can you strike and can you wait for that mistake? And I thought with, you know, the way that they played tonight, even though it was a loss, it was more of a, if you're undermanned right now, if you don't have JT Miller, if you don't have Filip Hronek, those are very, very important pieces for your team. How do you play this a smart way? And I thought there was some brains behind this Vancouver Canucks team tonight. There was a lot of passion. Yeah. There was a lot of physicality. But there was also a cerebral nature to them to say, hey, you can have the puck, but we're not going to give you anything to the inside, which is something that they did last year.
Well, and you know, for those who have been listening to the post-game show, and especially after some games where the Canucks, you know, have outchanced the opponent or even outshot the opponent, you know, Bick and I will be like, you know what, to be honest, I didn't think they played to the identity as well as they should. They weren't boxing out as well. They weren't doing the staples as well as they should. So it's not just about the chances. It's not just about the shots. It's about how you defend. And tonight, despite the shots, we consider and say they defended really well in their own zone. Before we let you go, though, Randeep, a lot of reactions on the text inbox, 650-650. It's one text after another when it comes to the officiating. And Kelly Sutherland being involved in a bit of a, let's say, controversial officiated game against the Canucks is pretty much par for the course. We see this all the time when he's involved in calling Canucks games. The biggest no call initially was the elbow by Joel Eriksson-Ek on Sherwood during the second period. It was a high hit during the Wild power play. I was really shocked they didn't call that, and we'll see if that, you know, gets a fine. I don't know about suspension. We'll see if that gets a fine. It was a bad hit to the head to Sherwood. And then the Kaprizov trip on Garland. I mean, it's as blatant as day. The officials are right there looking at it, and we have tons of texts. J.M. Vernon, a bunch of others texting in about how bad the officiating was. What did you think of those two plays in particular?
Yeah, those two were both obvious penalties to me. I think the Kiefer Sherwood one, you know, that's leading with the lumber. That's a high hit. That's a player that could have been hurt. He was not feeling great on the bench. And, you know, that's when, if you're trying to protect the players in the NHL, his head goes straight into the glass there. So I wasn't a fan of that one. I thought the Kaprizov one in overtime is, if it wasn't a scoring opportunity or you're not taking away a transition chance, maybe you let it go in overtime. But this was, you know, leading a break the other way. I think you have to call that. And to be fair, you know, Minnesota players were barking at Kelly Sutherland throughout the game too. There was a cross check by Tyler Myers on Eriksson-Ek, if I'm not mistaken, in the third period, which was also an obvious penalty. So I feel like they missed majority of the Vancouver calls. There was another call, the too many men on the ice, which is one of the more obvious ones you'll see in the NHL this season. And all of Vancouver's bench was on their feet saying, aren't you not going to call that? And right after that is where Middleton ends up scoring the goal. So I wasn't a fan of the officiating. I'm with the texters. I thought there were three or four obvious calls, three of them going against Vancouver. But, you know, it's an indictment when you say it's consistently bad, right, for both teams. So, listen, for them to fight through that and still pick up the point and not get frustrated, I like that from the character of Vancouver. They're not going to make excuses. But could the officiating have been better? Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. A lot of people texting in about it. And we'll get to some of your thoughts. Doug and Emu as well thinks the referees have wild uniforms under their jersey. So a lot of anger in the text inbox, as you would imagine, Randeep, after a couple of calls like that. But great stuff tonight, man, calling the game alongside Brendan Batchelor. And we look forward to seeing you in person and at Rogers Arena on Friday when the Canucks return home to take on the Columbus Blue Jackets.
All right, I'm making the PSA, guys. Get there early. Remember, Taylor
yes.
Swift is performing at BC Place. You don't want to miss puck drop. You don't want to do all. Get there early as you possibly can.
Yeah, absolutely.
See you guys.
You got it, Randeep. That is Randeep Janda. And that is the game review brought to you by BC Honda Dealers. Love a good save, then you'll love the all-new, all-electric Honda Prologue EV. Score up to $10,000 in combined rebates. Visit bchonda.ca. Phone boards are open, 604-280-0650. Your toll-free 1-888-275-0650. And before we get to the phone boards here, what's happening on the Dunbar Lumber text inbox, Bick? 650-650.
Suki and Maple Ridge, I think this is the turning point of the season. Played great without relying on Quinn and, of course, all of our injured players. Great system game. Quinn Hughes, just to illustrate the point, yeah, it was a minus three tonight with, obviously, the goal, though. But he did also have 3 minutes of the puck throughout the course of the game. Mm-hmm. But yes, it wasn't as influential of a Quinn Hughes game. This one, how do the Canucks apply this kind of effort at home? It must drive the coaches crazy when it should be even easier to apply this type of play at home. So we'll see once they get back here, but obviously a lot of kudos for the effort, including from Sabres Rob. That was a great effort. That looked like a serious playoff contender to me. That's Sabres Rob coming in. 650.
Yeah, Glenn from Ottawa says, I can't remember the last time I could say that after a Minnesota Wild game, that this was a hell of a game. Yeah, usually sure. Games in Minnesota are not the most entertaining. And Canucks fans are vibing, feeling good about their team after this game. And Noah from the WAC says, why did it feel like a conference final preview? That is Noah from the WAC texting in.
Maybe because you believe, Noah. How about that?
Yeah.
I feel like Morpheus. Are you believing now, Trinity?
we believe that we can win. All right. Keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox. Let's take a phone call before we hit the break, and let's go to Bella, where we have Don on the line. Don, thanks for calling in, buddy. What are your thoughts here after a tough 3-2 overtime loss for the Canucks in Minnesota?
Well, hey there. Yeah, I'm very happy with road trip. They got a lot of points out of it. I don't know why there was no penalty in overtime there. I think that was a really horrible non-call. It sure would be nice to see a healthy Canucks team like Demko, Joshua, not really 100%. Besser out for a while. He's coming back now. And now Miller and Hronek. But, you know, despite all these injuries, they're playing pretty good. Thanks mm-hmm. a lot.
Hey, thanks for the phone call. And they are, you know, and we see a lot of people texting in about that. Bungalow Jim, no Demko, no JT, no Hronek. Minnesota still needed Kelly the Fraud Sutherland to beat us. I thought we were the better. I thought they were the best the league can offer. That's Bungalow Jim texting in. But considering what they're lacking, that's what I was impressed by. And, you know, as far as a turning point, you know, somebody texted that in or not. To me, this was the most committed game I can remember outside
that's a nice
of,
word, yeah.
You know, the Kings game was really good too on the road, right? That's the one we kind of looked at and said, that's the game. But this was one of the most committed games I saw from them. And considering what they've gone through with these injuries and considering the success on the road trip, is this the moment where they gel and really come together in that sense?
Yeah, it's a fair point. Again, it should illustrate the point, too, that you can have a good loss.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
yeah.
There's a lot of optimism coming in the inbox.
Well, you can't, 'cause
a lot of pride
seeing
to see the effort, right? And you can see that, all right, it was close. Obviously, Besser, if he doesn't hit the post in that spot. Actually, some text coming in, too. It's like, why didn't he pass it on the 2-on-0? You're on 2-on-0. It totally makes sense. Make the pass for the tap
hit
in.
Hit the post. Almost
he hit the
scored,
post.
Yeah.
He almost scores. Look, if he buries it, but he doesn't bury it, and then suddenly it's Kaprizov the other way. But nevertheless, fine margins that they could have just turned this and had this unreal 10-point road trip. But you just see that even in a tight game and in a loss that, you know, some things go against you with the officiating and everything like that. Certainly you can see the style of play start to turn into your favor.
Yeah, like I was saying before, we've had so many post-game shows, and we try to be as honest as we can about what we see in games. And if they play well and lose, it's like, okay, yeah, you know what? Like tonight, like, you know, they deserved a better fate. And they've had games where they've won, and we're like, yeah, they won. It's good. You take the win, but here are some problems and this has to get fixed and whatever. And this is a night where you just say, considering all the obstacles in front of them, a really strong effort by the Canucks on the road to pick up a point against the Minnesota Wild. Let's take one more phone call before we hit the break. And let's go to Richmond, where we have Sam on the line. Sam, thanks for calling in. What are your thoughts here tonight?
Hey, Sad. Thanks for taking my call. I'm going to make it quick. I didn't have any problems with the Canucks last night. Today. I'm already getting confused which day it is.
I was saying today, tonight throughout the early games, and tonight I was saying today, so I'm all over the place. Yeah,
I understand. But this is on one person and one person only, and I mentioned this to the producer, the referees. Kelly Sutherland, and a lot of Canucks fans know that he was the referee during the Stanley Cup Final Game 7, 2011. He did a terrible job then. He's done a terrible job now. He's a terrible referee. I still don't understand why he gets games. I don't even know why he made it to the NHL. He's terrible. An absolute joke. There's something. The league has to address this because no one else is having this problem with it except for us. And they lost because of the referees tonight. I'm sorry. I'm not usually a referee, you know, person, but that was a disgrace. and he should lose his job from that. I'm sorry. I'm sure he's a nice guy, but that was just terrible. Anyhow, thanks for taking my call. Bye.
Thanks for the phone call. Sam in Richmond, frustrated, getting it off his chest, not happy with the officiating from Kelly Sutherland tonight.
Look, we're getting a lot of texts about, like, explain that one to me, because I do think...
Which one are you talking about?
The Garland one.
What are you trying to explain here, Vic? Be careful, Matt. Tread carefully on this one.
Because I do think we do a good job
yes.
of going through the rule book and, like, hey, this is the wording in the rule book.
And this is why it happened.
This is where we think the ref saw this in this moment. I don't have one of those for you tonight.
No, man. That's a clear tip.
I generally don't have one of those for you
on
tonight.
On both. I mean, I know people talk about the too many men, too. That one, I don't want to get into the too many men one. But to me, the two really obvious ones were the Sherwood one. It's a dangerous hit to the head. It is, right?
Yeah,
it's a dangerous hit to the head.
Again, we talked about it in the intermission. Like, his arm is up well in advance to making contact with Sherwood. So it's not as if it was like, oh, my vantage point wasn't good and he snuck in an elbow. Like the Sam Bennett play on Brad Marchand in the playoffs, right?
It was off the head.
That was like a sneaky kind of a rabbit punch play. And it's like, oh, look, it happened so fast. Erickson's ex-elbow or his arm is extended as he's approaching Sherwood. And he's come from the other side of the ice. It's not as if you just couldn't see him coming from a spot. He came from some distance away. The Garland one, I don't know, man. The puck is right there. Are you not watching Kaprizov fumble this puck and Garland have an opportunity to go in the other way? What's going on here? I'm as equally as baffled, and usually we can find a lining of justification to be like, all right, from ref's vantage point, this is what he saw. I got nothing for you. Got nothing for you tonight.
Yeah, that one is it's a blown call. I don't think there's any – even the most biggest Canuck critic would not call that a clean play. It's an obvious trip that is a blown call by the officials. Bernie from Kelowna says, pretty tough when you have to not only battle the other team, but the officiating as well. Really good effort by the boys. Well done from the Canucks. And so a lot of reaction on the text inbox, 650-650. Keep your thoughts coming in. We'll break down the game a bit more. A lot to get to about how the Canucks score their goals and the things that did well tonight and how that kind of bodes for the team throughout this road trip. Plus, we'll hear from the Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet and more as the Canucks Central postgame show continues, presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Satyar Shah with Bick Nizar and Homier Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Miss any part of Halford and Brough in the morning? Subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcast and don't miss an episode. This is where you talk Canucks. You're listening to the Canucks Central Postgame Show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
40 seconds left in overtime. Kaprizov, right wing for Rossi, bobble the puck at center. It's stolen. It's a 2-on-0 for the Canucks. Shooter ahead. In alone. Besser hit the goalpost. And it bounces back the other way. 2-on-1 for the Wild. Marco Rossi has Kaprizov with him. Rossi to Kaprizov. He scores! Brock Besser hit the goalpost on a 2-on-0 for the Canucks at one end of the ice. The Wild come back the other way, and Kirill Kaprizov scores his 16th of the year, beating Kevin Lankinen from the right circle. Minnesota wins 3-2 tonight in overtime.
And both teams had chances. Brock Besser rings one off the post, launches a transition attack the other way. And Kirill Kaprizov on a one-time chance. A little snapshot that ends up beating Kevin Lankinen.
Controversial end to the game, a 3-2 Canucks loss in overtime against the Wild as they wrap up a six-game road trip with a 4-1-1 record. Very impressive, all things considered. And I'm not sure the score really flattered the Canucks as well as it should have, considering the way they played in the third. Again, I was really impressed in the third. After the Wild tied the game, Canucks took over on the road against one of the top teams in the league.
Deserved a point tonight.
Yeah, both deserved a point. I thought the Canucks deserved the second point, maybe slightly more. That's just how I feel about it, but that's how it goes sometimes.
OT is a coin flip.
Yeah, no, it is. But you know, you call that trip, and maybe we're having a different
conversation. It's a weighted coin sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Maybe it flips on one side a bit more than others, depending on who's flipping that coin.
Yeah.
All right, this is the Canucks Central Post Game Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online, DLEAMC.com. Satyar Shah with Bick Nizar. And keep your thoughts coming in to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. We'll get to your phone calls coming up in a few moments as well, 604 780-0650 or toll-free 1-888-275-0650. What else can you say about what Jake DeBrusk has done recently? 11 goals now in the campaign. Mr. November is red hot in December. He has 4 goals now in his first 2 games. That's 7 in the month of November. And what he's doing around the goal and his nose for the net right now, it's like he's sniffing every goal opportunity out and cashing in.
Yeah, as Linda from Surrey's texting in, I'm liking DeBrusk Ember. I'm not sure if that one fits, but nevertheless, players are going to play. Refs are going to not ref. Shake it off. You got 9 of 12. That's the rest of the text from Linda. But just DeBrusk in general just looks far more confident player. Like even on the goal, you watch as Susie goes to take that shot, the confidence and just the directness to get to the net, because he's basically in line with Susie as that shot goes in. Pedersen's battling in front,
yeah.
But DeBrusk recognizes, hey, I got to get to the front of the net. And it's not a saunter there. It is a direct sprint to get into that space, wins the space in front of Khushnadiev as well, and is able to pot that one in. And that's what you want to see. And we've seen him just, obviously the goals are the highlights, but he's been pressuring defenders on the forecheck, yeah. Forcing turnovers, creating opportunities for himself. And there was a lot of concern that, like, hey, he's not even really just shooting much. Well, another 8 shot attempts tonight, 6 of them on goal. Obviously gets the 1 goal as well. Yeah. So it's encouraging signs for DeBrusk here, outside of just, hey, the goals are coming all of a sudden.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm there with you. Let's take a couple phone calls here before we get to more texts and get the thoughts of the Canucks head coach. And let's go to Smithers, where we have Joe on the line. Joe, buddy, thanks for calling in. Now, what do you have for us tonight?
Gentlemen, how's it going?
Good, man. How are you feeling tonight?
Well, good. I mean, last time I called, I don't know if you guys remember. I was.
Oh, we remember. Up. We remember.
We don't forget.
This is not going to be a call where you guys are going to use me coming back from break again. So that was pretty cool. But, you know, everyone's one thing first off is I have a different approach here where I'm super pumped up right now in a positive way just because of the way we've been playing here. We've been grinding it out. We've been going back to our system. Everybody's doing their job under adversity right now, and I think this is really something that we needed for sure, right,
mm-hmm.
Moving forward. Second of all, everyone's complaining about the refs, and we always can do that. And I'm of a different approach with this is I would rather let, you know, as a guy that pushed the line a lot when I played, like I'd rather let the guys play the game, kind of like how they did tonight. Sure, there was a couple of missed calls, but overall, I would rather watch a game like we did tonight than to watch the refs make a bunch of phantom calls from the red line from an incident that happened in the corner when the corner ref doesn't even call it. Like, I would rather have the game we saw tonight any day of the week. But the one that sticks out, obviously, is the one that hit on Sherwood. And that's a hit that, you know, it's a forearm shiver lined up from a distance at full speed. And that's one that should have been called. I have more of a problem with the hit that was put on Sherwood tonight than I do with the Revo hit on Nurse. Because, you know, 99 times out of 100, Darnell Nurse keeps taking that puck wide or rings it up the boards. And that one time where he cuts out way quicker than what any other D-man would, and the goalie doesn't even warn him, and all of a sudden now Revo's right on him. I didn't see that as a targeted hit. I just saw that as a heavy-duty hit that happens. And unfortunately, sometimes when you get hit, you get hurt. And I think also the fact that Sherwood is a man and got up and you know, played the rest of the shift.
Well, got the puck out too, also, right? Yeah.
He did. Yeah, he did. And then he played, like, he didn't miss a shift either, right? Mm. So I think that kind of played, had a little bit of an effect too on the refs. I think maybe if he was still on the ground, that could have been a call, but I don't even want to see that call. I want to see what happened when Sherwood gets up and takes the number. We'll deal with it later. But thanks for the rant, guys. I appreciate it. Thanks for taking the call. I'm listening to the end tonight.
Thanks, buddy. That is Joe in Smithers calling in. And, you know, speaking of Sherwood, he also made a great play in overtime on the 2-on-1.
Oh, where he did he ever.
Like, it was,
he's
it was
done
a great
this now multiple
play.
Times, not necessarily in the defensive zone, but where he's switching the stick a bunch.
Right.
And he's almost baiting the guy to go on a side. He did it against Yossi. He did it in another game, too, that led to a goal-scoring opportunity. I can't remember which game.
He was hurrying hard.
He was playing some curling out there. The Master Championships, I believe, are coming pretty soon in curling as well in January. But, look, he's baiting the pass.
Yeah.
And he knocks that one down. It's an unreal play.
Yeah, it really was. And to Joe's point, that to me is the more, like, it's a clear headshot. And those are the things you don't want to see. And had he been injured, do you think there's a different type of reaction from the officials? Potentially, right? So I understand the frustration about that. But thankfully, more important than anything, Sherwood seemed to be okay afterwards and just made a great play getting the puck out after taking that hit to the head from Joel Eriksson-Ek when the Canucks were on the PK. Let's continue on the phone boards, and let's go to London, Ontario, where we have Sean on the line. Sean, thanks for calling in. What do you have for us tonight?
Yeah, thanks, gents. Just wanted to talk real briefly about Pettersson. I watched the game in Detroit. I thought he played very well, and I think we're watching him become a true playmaker. But struggled to watch the skating. I thought he was going to come back this year a lot stronger on his skates. He seems to fall down easily. Cannot win 50-50 battles. That overtime effort was quite weak. Yeah, just wanted your guys' opinions. Is this an injury that's just continuing, or what is it? Because it is continually very, very tough to watch him get overpowered by players he should not be overpowered by. And then the face-offs just, you know, continue to struggle there.
Yeah, hey,
I appreciate your opinion on it.
Yeah, no problem, Sean. Thanks for calling in. And, you know, Pettersson's issue staying on his feet has kind of been there, right? Mm-hmm. That's something that he struggled with. And, you know,
nobody here has denied that he doesn't fall.
Of course. And Sean even called in and said he played really well, creating chances, and he's coming out of it, but it's more about the skating side. What could it be? We know he had the knee tendonitis issue, which he spoke about after the playoffs and spoke about how that affected him throughout his offseason training. And perhaps, even though nobody admits to it, did it play a part in his slow start and where his skating's at? And I think if you're, as he mentioned, again, I'm just going by what he said, that the knee injury did curtail his training. If he was dealing with that through the offseason, like he said it was, I think this would be the wrong offseason for him to be able to make some gains in his skating. Because if you're not skating as much and you can't push as much and you're trying to get yourself to a point where you're getting ready for camp, there isn't enough runway, especially after making the playoffs, where you can really hit those weaknesses as much as you could. So I think, if, again, I'm going by what he said, and he said this in training camp about the knee injury causing him some issues with his training, that may be the main reason why he didn't improve from that aspect year to year. Can that improve over the course of the season? You hope so. I do think those things will matter more in the playoffs. You want him to get stronger. There are a lot of positives to his play. Like, you know, again, like I think tonight we can talk about a lot of good things with his play. But to answer the question that Sean asks, yeah, he needs to get stronger on his feet. And as to why he hasn't been able to make that leap this year, I think that would be my best explanation for it.
Yeah, I've used the phrase too. Look, if I like 90% of what a player does, I can live with the other 10%. And the 10% features, you know, getting knocked over.
It does.
Frequently.
But here's the thing. As far as the battles, right? One of the biggest battles he won tonight was the front of the net on John Merrill.
Yes.
Where he outpositions Merrill, outbattles him, gets to the puck first, throws a backhand on net, which leads to Jake DeBrus scoring the goal.
And you've mentioned this. Like, he does hit. He does block shots. You'd be surprised how high up in the list he is on, you know, physical nature plays. And as much as we sit here and be like, yeah, he falls over, there is an understanding amongst players too that he's not a frail player. Like, players are very aware how strong he can be on the puck too, and how difficult it can be to get the puck off of him. The other point Sean mentioned just about the faceoffs. You know, this is something we talked about last year, that, hey, it looks like he made a big jump in the face cuts because he was historically about a 45% face-off player, and then he spiked up to 51% last year, back to 44.6 so far this year. And since JT has been out of the lineup, it's at 41%.
Well, he's taken more and more tougher ones, whereas, you know, I think, you know, when you have JT in the lineup, you have some other guys that can win draws, like Teddy Bluger as well. You can kind of pick your spots a bit more where when he takes faceoffs. And in this game, he had to take a bunch, and he takes some tough ones. I will say he did win a couple of key ones on the power play, especially one on the PK, I mean, that guy where they were able to get a clear off of. So he's won a few here and there. But, you know, to the point, I think that's the best description we have as far as where his game's at, aspect. But he had 2 points tonight.
Yeah.
He's up to 23 points now in 24 games on the campaign. And
Remember when there was Texas, like, he's not going to get to 60 this year.
He has 18 points in his last 12 games. And I agree that he can get better.
Yeah.
I don't even think he's played his best. He shot the puck a couple times, and there's still more he can do there, right? But I think the encouraging part is he's getting better, and there's still so much more that he can do.
Yeah, we're still waiting for that, like, neutral zone dominance. And it looked like that first period, it was starting to come together, and he had a couple of nice plays in the neutral zone. But then the Goodrow goal happens, and there he is in the neutral zone, kind of getting a bit flat-footed. Even the Middleton goal, he's a little late. Now he's trying to dive back into the slot and looking towards Langton to clean something up, but he's, you know, as he's rotating out to Middleton, he goes to sprawl and kind of block the shot and doesn't really get in the way, but there's some distance he's got to cover, and so if you're positioned correctly, yeah, can you slow that down? So there's a couple of things that still need to be cleaned up defensively, and as much as there's a rush to say with the production, say, he's back! Again, the truest version of this player is not like an empty calorie player. It's not just the production and then go get scored on your own end. The truest version of this player is a fundamentally dominant player that tilts the ice significantly in his favor. And tonight, again, 2 assists, but also a dash one.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think there's more there, right? But I liked how he played tonight for large part. Again, came up big on a couple of goals. Some people are not very happy. Michael says, I don't know what Sean was watching. I think Pettersson looks strong on his skates right now. That's Michael texting in. And John in Calgary says, can we stop with the Pettersson's falling down all the time? Did you not see Henrik and Daniel their first 3 or 4 years on the ice every game? PD will mature physically. Let him. That is John in Calgary. Now, Tommy the Banker also has a message for us, says, you guys are literally the reason, as in you and I, Bick.
Oh, I was always worried when you guys. What do we do this time?
He says, you guys are the reason I don't complain about the refs anymore. Why let it get to you like that? I get some fans are just letting it out, but for us longtime fans, what does it matter? Honestly, at the point, we just got to move past it as soon as possible, like a bad breakup, LOL. I mean, I'm always here for the breakup analogy, and you do have to move past it. Right? I think you do have to move past it, and I understand the frustration on it.
Yeah, you're notorious for the relationship analogies.
You know, I mean.
Not the breakup analogies, so.
Depends on which ones you want to go back in history and kind of dissect. But, you know, to that point, and I know, you know, others were texting in some similar thoughts about, you know, you kind of have to move on when some of these things, when bad things happen against you, you learn from it.
Yeah.
And somebody had a good perspective and said they probably didn't deserve to win the game in Boston. Probably deserve 2 points tonight.
Sure.
You're still plus one. Think about that way,
out.
Right?
It generally does even out over the course of the season.
And that's why, to me, my biggest takeaway isn't like being irate about losing. If this was a playoff game, you know, a deciding playoff game, there's, you know, the importance is a bit higher. My big takeaway is just how the Canucks battled tonight. Like, honestly, the way they played in the third and the way they were able to get a point out of this game tonight and probably deserved more, I think is a real testament to their effort. And let's go to Sean in New West. Sean in New West calling in. What are your thoughts here, buddy, on the Canucks' 3-2 overtime loss against the Minnesota Wild?
Well, thanks for taking my call, guys. I really appreciate you taking my call. About this game, I mean, Sutherland, I mean, you know, he's the worst referee, obviously, of all time, probably. You know, he's probably the Earl Hebner of the NHL. He just screws the Canucks over and over again. You know, it's no surprise. So the fact is, the Canucks, they battle hard. They got a point. You got to give them credit. You know, I mean, Kaprizov's, I mean, the guy's a superstar. He's going to bury that overtime chance. The guy's, like, the best player in the league right now. So I'm not too mad that they lost this game. You know, the Canucks, you know, they went 4-1-1 on this road trip, and, you know, they picked up a hard-fought point tonight. So not mad at all. You know, at least they got a result. You know, I can't say the same about Sets, Cleveland Browns. They didn't get a result last night.
Oh, man.
On Monday Night Football. So, you know, at least Canucks got a result.
They did. But, now, you know, stay on the line at the end, because I have a question for you before you finish it up. But go on with Jameis again. You know, dig that knife in.
You know, that interception that he threw, you know, that just basically put the dagger for Sat last night. So what was your question?
Were you at Survivor Series?
Yeah, I was going to ask the same thing.
Yes, I was. I was. And I was disappointed that the People's Champion, The Rock, didn't show up. He should have showed up.
I was too, you know, but it was a lot of fun, though, wasn't it? They've had a great time at the event.
Oh, it was great. It was overall great. It's just that The Rock, everybody wanted to see The Rock, and he didn't show up. So that was a really big disappointment. But unfortunately, Sat, and we wanted to hear Sat smell what The Rock was cooking. That's what we wanted to hear. And
yeah, we needed Sat's intro music out there.
We do. Right, thanks for taking my call, guys.
Hey, thanks, man. That is Sean in New West calling in. So good from Sean. Always fun hearing from him. But yeah, I mean, Jameis Winston.
Why didn't you don the boots, throw on some tights, Crisco yourself up, and be like, all right, let's go. If you smell what the Sat is cooking.
Could you imagine? Like, who's this idiot?
People would have chanted. Yeah. They were chanting JT Miller. They clearly listened to the post-game show. They know who you
are. I'm not sure about security, though.
Can you imagine?
I've been just throwing down so hard.
Triple H is like, what's going on?
And I'm like, I got a bad knee.
Looking like Hulk Hogan in his 70s. Just be like, I got four moves, man. That's it.
That's it. That's all I got, man. It's like in what is it? Knocked Up. It's like doing the he's got one dance move. He's like, that's all he's got.
It's working for him.
That's all he's got. All right. Keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox, 650-650. We'll see if we get to the phone boards a bit later on as well. But let's get the thoughts of the Canucks head coach, Rick Tocchet, after a 3-2 overtime loss in Minnesota against the Wild. And here is Tocchet at the podium, brought to you by Tiletown.
Well, Rick, to go up against the number one team in the league and to grab a point in it, your thoughts on the team's fight tonight?
Great game. Guys played really hard tonight. It's a hell of a road trip. Could have, you know, easily won the game. So guys should feel good about themselves.
You guys talked about how strong their third period was, but something you guys did want to work on was your start and the way you guys came out. Did you feel like it was good first period?
Yeah, we had a good start. Maybe about 5 to 6 minutes in the second. Other than that, I thought we had a solid game. Everybody was scrappy tonight.
Petey, with 2 points tonight, goes into the top 10 all-time in Canucks history for multi-point games. What's been working for his game lately?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like the whole team. We're just working, have a game plan, working hard, you know, staying in the moment, you know, and he's getting some points for us. That's good.
They score early in the third to tie it, Rick, but it seemed like the third was by far your guys' best period, and guys got right back on their toes.
Yeah, like I said, we were solid. We just played a solid game. I mean, the guys are doing a good job blocking out noise, and we're just doing a, you know, we're just moving along every game. I like the attitude. I thought the last day we had some good video. Guys were engaged. They were asking a lot of questions, so it was good. It's good to get home though. What is it? 9 points out of 12. You know, it's a tough trip.
What about the overall style of the game? The environment. It seemed like it was pretty physical. Not a lot of space.
Yeah, it's great. It's great building to play in. Great, you know, loud fans. You know, like our fans. It's a nice venue to play in. A little playoff hockey atmosphere, but yeah, that's, you know, they're in first place, and it came down to, you know, one shot.
That is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet at the podium, brought to you by Tiletown. From vision to reality, Tiletown has created everything you need for your tiling project. See them today in Victoria, Richmond, Langley, and online at mytiletown.ca. The coach, of course, very pleased with his team's effort. Great game, great road trip. The guys should be proud of how they played. And outside of 5 to 6 minutes in the second, he thought they were very scrappy. You know, like the attitude. You mentioned how the guys have been engaged, asking the right questions. And
solid.
Video work's been good. And
solid.
And talked about Pettersson. Yeah, solid. It's all a lot. And talked about Pettersson working hard, staying in the moment, much like the team. Didn't really get into too many details on anything, but very clear that he was very pleased with not only how they played tonight, but also coming away with a 4-1 record on a pretty challenging road trip.
Yeah, I think he's echoing a lot of the sentiments we're getting in the inbox here, 650-650, that even in a loss, there is a lot of pride from people that what they were watching here. And Rachel in Vancouver, the loss stings, but the effort from the group displayed in the third was so encouraging. First time this season, I've been completely convinced that they deserved that win, hoping this translates back in our home barn. And there was a reference there, too, of just about what they did at the start of the game, right? Because Minnesota, we know, outside of just how good they've been this season, they've started games really well. They've scored the first goal 14 times. It's something the Canucks have struggled at, scoring first. Will they get their goal in the first period and have a lead, but ultimately, you know, lose in overtime? But that first period is something to build upon. And it did get stronger as the game went along.
Yeah, absolutely. It did. Marty to Red text in, too bad no one asked Tocchet if the Canucks were solid.
Yeah, there's a theme. I feel like sometimes he like has a word of the day calendar, or just like sees a word right before the press conference. He's like, solid.
Just read solid today. I'm dropping solid 7 different times tonight. But yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that we were kind of joking that he's been a bit more guarded in his post-game commentary this year. The head coach has been, but obviously more than pleased with how he played so far tonight. This one here says, guys, I don't follow the refs, but listening to the callers tonight, I decided to Google Kelly Sutherland.
Uh-oh.
Turns out he's actually from Richmond.
Oh, yeah.
Well, maybe that's the reason why. You know, you can't be biased. Got to show you're not biased. All right.
He's throwing him off the scent.
I'm definitely not a Canucks fan. All right. Keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox. We'll get to some more of your reaction on the other side. We'll break down the goals the Canucks scored and were scored, the goals that Minnesota scored, more analysis on the game. We'll hear from Elias Pettersson, plus Ian McIntyre is going to join us during the final segment after a tough 3-2 loss against Minnesota on the road. But the Canucks, a successful road trip, 4-1-1. And you are listening to the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at DLEAMC.com. More coming up next on the Home of Your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Canucks Talk with Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drantz. We'll dive deep into all that's happening with the Vancouver Canucks. Listen 12 to 2 p.m. on Sportsnet 650 or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Canucks Central Postgame Show. Join the discussion on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
For Besser, left corner, last minute of the second. Back to Soucy, long shot, blocked in front. Goals to the near boards. Besser gets it free again to Soucy at the line. Kuznetsov's been out there for more than 2.5 minutes. Bogosian and Merrill more than 90 seconds as Soucy shoots from the line. Rebound for Pettersson. The DeBrus scores! The puck sat loose in front of the net. Pettersson tried to jam it on target, but got it across to Jake DeBrusk, who scores his team-leading 11th of the year to give the Canucks a 2-1 lead in the final minute of the second.
The Vancouver Canucks leaning on Minnesota late in the second period.
Yeah, like I said, we were solid. We just played a solid game. I mean, the guys are doing a good job blocking out noise, and we're just doing we're just moving along every game. I like the attitude. I thought the last day we had some good video. Guys were engaged. They were asking a lot of questions, so it was good. It's good to get home though. What is it? 9 points out of 12. You know, it's a tough trip.
Four solids. That's four solids from the Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet. A 3-2 Canucks loss in overtime.
Was there an over-under?
A valiant effort by the Vancouver Canucks tonight. Unfortunately, a loss, but the coach very pleased with how the team performed.
We were solid. We just played a solid game.
Yeah, that's just very, very strong, very solid. And that solid is one text message is sent in, and this person also sent in a picture of some tater tots, and now all of a sudden I'm craving tater tots, so...
What?
Yeah, look at the picture that came in. You know, those are tater tots, are they not?
What does that have to do with anything?
I'm just saying. You know,
okay,
they're just in there. All right, this is the Canucks Central Post Game Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network. And keep getting your thoughts into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox 650-650. And you know, we'll get to some of your questions and comments as the show goes on. We have Elias Pettersson's take on the game tonight as well coming up in a little bit. And, you know, we've talked a lot about Pettersson's games throughout this year, going back to last year. And even though we spoke about, you know, the caller questioning some of his strength, I still think he's played a lot better recently. I think this is a player coming around. And like somebody texted in a bit earlier, Josh in Mission, and I won't get through the entire text, but essentially says, very impressed with how Pettersson and DeBrusk are playing. And if these guys get going and get JT and Besser back, it really changes the ceiling of the team, and thinks that if those guys get healthy, you get JT Miller back, and you have two duos at the top of your lineup, and you add another defenseman with Lankinen and Demko, if Demko's healthy, to Josh's point, you start feeling a lot better about what this team can do down the road in the season. Of course, Filip Hronek's injury is still looming large. He's away for 2 months, and it's not going to be easy overcoming it for 2 full months until he gets healthy. But I understand Josh's point that we haven't seen Pettersson and DeBrusk get hot up until recently, and now they're kind of carrying the team offensively so far in JT Miller's absence, and that's something we wanted to see. Can Pettersson drive? Can you see DeBrusk be part of a top line? And if these guys can do this consistently and you get JT back, and we'll talk about the back end, but I think you feel pretty good about what you have at the very top of your lineup offensively.
Yeah, what are we talking about here? 8 goals in 6 games for Jake DeBrusk all of a sudden, and Pettersson, you know, while we're discussing him, like, still not at the level we believe that he can play at, but nevertheless, another 2 points tonight. That makes it 18 and 12 for Elias Pettersson, and 2 primary assists tonight as well. So there's that element of getting the puck in the net from Elias Pettersson. So if they're going to start playing like a true first line, right? And hopefully they get a third running mate. You know, Sherwood had a spell there. Besser's filling in right now with JT being out, but you know, at some point they'll go back together. We might see just, you know, more consistent lines here if and when they get healthy and are consistently healthy. But yeah, this is the type of production you want to see. And doing it against a really good team here tonight in the Minnesota Wild.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's break down the goals in this game here tonight. The Canucks did open up the scoring in the first period, and I thought the first period was essentially the way I expected the game to kind of go heading into it. We talked about how 5-on-5, the Minnesota Wild have been the better team, and you would expect them to have the edge 5-on-5, especially with the Canucks' injuries. But where the Canucks can have an edge in this game is special teams. The PK for the Minnesota Wild came into the game 27th on home ice, only killed 64% of penalties coming into the game, and that's how it unfolded. The Canucks weren't the better team 5-on-5, at least in the first, but when they got a power play opportunity, they made the most of it. And it was a guy we should give credit to who's taken a lot of criticism, Nils Höglander, drawing a penalty, getting the Canucks on the power play to begin with.
Yeah, and then following suit with some effort there is Connor Garland crashing the faceoff. He wins the draw. And for me, the theme of this power play was retrievals, right? Yeah. Pettersson took a shot, Besser retrieved it. Pettersson took another shot later, he retrieved it. There was a play on a pass where it was a Pettersson to DeBrusk, puck bounces, and it's DeBrusk and Besser combining to recover it. And then eventually it just comes up to Quinn Hughes. It's just a normal point shot, and we thought, okay, was there a tip? I didn't see a big tip. It just Gustafsson kind of misses it here, and Canucks are up 1-0.
Yeah, I think a lot of it was Gustafsson just not making a clean play on it, but maybe a bit tired because the Canucks had a lot of pressure. They moved the puck cleanly and even got a couple cross-seam passes, especially one from Besser to Pettersson. And once you load a goalie up like that, gets fatigued, moves around, there's some traffic around, you know, sometimes those shots find a way to get through, and Quinn Hughes' shot certainly did. Gave the Canucks a 1-0 lead, and that is how the first period came to an end. The Canucks with a 1-0 lead. And then in the second, that's when the Minnesota Wild pushed back and ultimately scored the game-tying goal. And Clay texted and others about that play and Quinn Hughes. And I thought, again, I thought this wasn't Quinn's best game, which I think is actually impressive about how the defense came together. I don't think Quinn played notably well. He had some good moments. But this kind of starts in the offensive zone where we've seen this exchange play sometimes by the far boards where JT's on the ice and Hronek and Hughes, well, they'll kind of skate towards the wall, and then JT will skate from down by the goal line up, and they'll do an exchange play, like a handoff play on the puck. It seems like Pettersson's trying to come across for either that deception or to get the handoff. And I don't think Quinn sees him because he backs into the boards and he collides with Pettersson, and that's how the puck turns over.
Yeah, Clay's just texting in here, 650-650. I don't want to critique Captain Quinn, but I do think sometimes getting the puck in deep is a better play than dangling at the line. It cost us in the first goal, in my opinion. And look, that's valid. Like, it plays a role. The puck comes out. Pettersson's in the neutral zone. He can certainly be on top of the puck a little bit more. And, you know, Goudreau pokes it free to Foligno, and then he has Goudreau as the trailer scoring on a 3-on-1. But that play at the blue line, I think, you know, you start taking away that freedom from Quinn Hughes. What are you taking off the menu then in that scenario, right? Because then you have to calculate, well, how many goals does he create off those moments where he can peel away from the forwards that are trying to attack him at the point? Because not a lot of players in this league can keep up with him, right? And even that play, it was more an unforced error by Quinn Hughes than it was a forced error by the Minnesota Wild player up top. And so if you want him to dump it in and just put it in deep, okay, that's fine. But you do have to consider how many goals that you're now taking away for your team because of it.
I think those are, you kind of live by the sword, die by the sword a little bit. Sometimes those things will happen. But there have been some awkward exchanges with Hughes and Pettersson at times. And I think that was kind of a moment where it happened. You mentioned Pettersson then steps up at the blue line, gets caught, and next thing you know is an odd man chance. And I thought Foligno, I don't know if he got away with interference necessarily, but did a good job of, you know how Tockett says chip a body? He just chips Quinn Hughes, kind of slows him down enough to not be able to get back into that play. But, you know, it kind of falls on Pettersson and Hughes on that play for that first goal for the Minnesota Wild to make it 1-1. And then the Vancouver Canucks late in that period, Bick. And, you know, we talk about Pettersson and Sean Calden and the like, his game. And, yeah, there were some moments he wasn't at his best, but he did win some battles when they mattered. And one big one he won was in front in the net with John Merrill, where he gets a backhand shot off before Jake DeBrusk deposits the shot in. But I know you want to talk about some of the good work Carson Soucy also did on this shift.
Yeah, he just slick, man. And it starts with a neutral zone takeaway for Pedersen and Besser, but you know, Carson Soucy's just being decisive here, right? We haven't seen a level of confidence, and he's got a good shot, whether it's a slap shot, but he also has just a really fluid wrister that he can really get it off with no snap, and he can pick a spot too. But this one, it's a shot, and there's a battle in front, and Pedersen does good work against Merrill, but also Jake DeBrus activates early as he sees Soucy shooting and gets to the space, and there's that puck there on a rebound for him to score his team-leading 11th goal, and it is turned around fast for Jake DeBrus.
Yeah, it absolutely did, and that made it a 2-1 game for the Vancouver Canucks heading into the third period, and this is where the Minnesota Wild were able to score pretty quickly, and you kind of wondered, okay, is that going to take the wind out of the Canucks' sails? And, you know, is this going to be the moment where Minnesota really starts taking over again? That's not exactly what happened, but it wasn't the cleanest shift from the Canucks that led to the 2-2 goal in the third period.
Yeah, it kind of starts on the goalie handling the puck here. Could he have gone up the wall on his forehand, decides to backhand it up the wall? And I don't think either winger was in place to kind of chase down the puck on either wall, whether it's Besser on the far side, DeBrusque on the near side. But nevertheless, comes up to Middleton, and he just takes a shot. And Lankin actually reads this late, and so it creates a rebound that Myers pushes away. But you think if Lankin then spots it early, can he just absorb that, plays over, reset, and have a defensive zone faceoff? But it comes back down low, Kaprizov versus Myers in front of the net, and he just kind of chips it on Lankinen. And so in that moment of a rebound there, Pedersen just sweeps it away, and it goes right to Middleton, and then Pedersen's got to close that space. He's sprawling to try to block it, and it just goes by Lankinen on the short side.
Yeah, and that is what made it 2-2 at that point. And the Canucks drew a penalty afterwards, got on the power play. They didn't really generate a ton with that advantage, but I think what it ended up doing was taking away some of the pressure from Minnesota after tying the game, and the buzz in the building really, you know, getting louder and louder. And from that point on, Bick, I thought, you know, we'll get to the game-winning goal in overtime, but I thought the Canucks were the better team to close out the third period after the Minnesota Wild had tied at 2-2.
Yeah, there's so many chances, right? There was a DeBrusque on the power play where he had two chances because he hits the outside of a point, the outside of the post after a Quinn Hughes point shot. And there was a rebound opportunity. He tried to knock one over Gustafsson as he's fallen over after a Besser shot from the bumper. Soucy had a couple of good shots. There was one that he really took his time to get a shot off, but I think he was just waiting to see if any forwards were going to be crashing the net to look for tips or for rebounds. Branstrom nearly has a moment that was set up by Besser. Sherwood obviously makes that great play defensively on a in OT on a 2-on-1, and then obviously the goal at the end.
Yeah, and you know, it's one of those things. You know, it's a 2-on-1. Kaprizov has enough time, and when you watch the replay, you know, Lankinen gets pretty close to getting it. Like, it just goes right above his glove, and he's coming over in desperation at that point. But you know, Kaprizov, I thought the Canucks for the most part kind of kept Kaprizov pretty quiet. He had the one shot off the post earlier in the game, mm-hmm. but and he's, you see how dangerous he is. You see the speed he can play with, and the power he has, and the talent that he has.
It's explosive.
But yeah. But it didn't feel like they were, you know, pinning the Canucks, creating chance after chance, you know. And I think for the most part, they did a pretty good job going head to head against that line. And that's one of the things that we kind of wondered about in this game coming into it. Were we going to see the Pedersen line get matched up against the Kaprizov line? And I think, as far as this game went, when I bring up what Elias Pettersson played against the most, you know, that's the line to play against the most. You know, he had 743 against Matt Boldy and 728 against Kirill Kaprizov. And when Pettersson was on the ice against those guys, it was pretty even. Like, if you look at the scoring chances, it was 6-6, high dangers, 3-2 in favor of the Canucks when they were out on the ice, 1-4-1 against. So it was one of those things that 5-on-5, you know, I think that's what you wanted to do in a game like this against that top line. Can you at least match what they have? And they did. So from that standpoint, I thought the line, the Pedersen line, at least in that regard, did a good job against Kaprizov tonight.
Yeah, I just want to say, like, there was, you know, how many, like, pivotal moments did it feel like Kaprizov was at the end of?
Like I said, that post he had in the second period,
yeah.
I think that's
and
pretty
again,
much
maybe
the
Middleton goal, because it's his first where he knocks it towards Lankinen.
Sure.
But, like, that's kind of extending it a bit because he's not even looking at the net. He's just kind of hitting one towards Lankinen, and it creates the rebound that leads to Middleton. But there's no assist on that because it's Pedersen that sweeps it away. in general, like, again, it was seven shot attempts, but even just looking at it, it's like seven shot attempts tonight for Kaprizov. Like, were they from distance?
And yeah,
it didn't feel overly threatening, but certainly when a moment calls for it, he's there. In a night where he plays 23-37, which wasn't the high mark for a forward tonight. Connor Garland, 24 minutes and 2 seconds.
24 minutes.
24 minutes for Connor Garland. Shout out Connor Garland. That's got to be a career high.
Well, I mean, I thought Garland, again, like, quietly, it's one of those games, again, that if you look at the shot totals, they weren't overwhelming, but that line, they created, because Connor Garland was hunting pucks down. One of the
How many times did he just get a puck through the neutral zone, chip it past the guy, get after, you know, below the red line? Like, he did plenty.
There was one shift in particular. I'm just going to bring this up because I want to be accurate about it. But there was one shift in particular that I was really impressed. And it all started, it was in the third period when the Canucks were really taking over. He was at the end of his shift and ends up getting a puck in deep. And he gets in, like, he looked like he had just come off the bench. That's how hard he skated and how fast he got in on the forecheck. He gets the puck. He creates a turnover. And next thing you know, Pettersson jumps on, Besser jumps on, and they get a shot. They get a rebound chance. That's the one where Besser gets a shot in the slot, and then DeBrusk comes around on the rebound and gets a backhand on, and that is some really that was on the power play. But there was another chance that was similar, 5-on-5 as well, and that all started from a Connor Garland forecheck in the third period, and he did that when he was tired, having played, you know, like almost like, what, 19 minutes at the time when that happened. So really impressive game from Connor Garland as far as his effort goes.
650 back into the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. This one, Callie from Vanderhoof. This could have been the Canucks' best 60. Actually started the game on time. Viking stat, we play like that every game. Win or lose, I'm going to be happy. Broadway B, similar. Good game. Everyone was in it. Boys stepped up against the Minnesota team. Almost had it. And a go Nucks go there. What are you seeing?
So one of the things I wanted to bring up was a question that came in a bit earlier. What was it? I'm going to bring this up here. Right. Chris and Burnaby, it's about the overtime, right? We were kind of joking about, you know, Besser getting, you know, the shot. And I know Besser is a Minnesota. He's trying to win the game. But when you're on a 2-on-0 on that spot, and he shot off the post, he scores, he almost gets it in. But, like, is that a one that you have to pass? Like, Chris Burnaby brings it up. It's a gimme if he passes it. Others brought it up, too. Like,
I'd
is
be
that
curious.
Something that, like, you get in that spot? Like, do you want to see the player pass it? Or a player who scored 40, do you want to see him just, you know, wire it like he did and just didn't go in?
I would be curious if Suter, when making that pass, maybe communicated, like, it's yours or something like that. Because he didn't even really shoulder check to see, like, it's a 2-on-0.
Right.
And it's clean as day that it's a 2-on-0.
Because, yeah, if he just goes, you know, across, it's happened.
Suter probably sends it back to you, right?
Or yeah, either way, yeah.
Now you got the goalie moving twice, and he's not going to be able to do that in short order in that spot. And 2-on-0s, you should absolutely score. My own general rule is, like, anytime it's +2 on an odd man advantage, make a pass. If it's 2-on-1, like we saw Suter last game, the defender takes the pass, so, okay, bury that shot. And, you know, it's tough to get clean shots through on the NHL. 3-on-1, make a pass. 2-on-0, make a pass. Make it difficult for the goalie. Otherwise, you're just making it like a regular breakaway. You're not utilizing the advantage that you have.
No, you're not. I'm with you on that. And it's this other one I wanted to get in before we hit the break, and we'll get to Elias Pettersson's comments postgame, plus Ian McIntyre in the final segment. But William and Langley, do you guys think we'll see Demko playing in any of the next six home games? Or do you think Shelovs will get another chance? I have a hard time seeing Shelovs playing another game.
Yeah, me too.
At least while he's now, like, maybe at some point later in the season, all signs point to Demko playing on the homestand. I think because it's, you know, it's so non-committal. I know Dhaliwal today mentioned he needs some more time, didn't practice a ton on the road. So will it maybe not be the first game? That's kind of been the suggestion that he would play against the Blue Jackets. I think we're all kind of careful because the timeline's shifted and taken longer than, you know, the team has kind of put out there and people have reportedly been saying about it. But it looks like he will be playing on this homestand.
Yeah, I've maintained since, like, the late October. Even when it was like, oh, 2-3 weeks away. I've maintained, like, until I see him and there's Al Murdoch going, like, number 35. I'm not going to do the Al Murdoch voice. But, like, Thatcher Demko, right? Like, until we see him actually in the crease. pardon me on having some skepticism of when the season debut is going to be.
Yeah, so we'll see him here most likely on this homestand, but which game is still a bit of a mystery. All right, keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox. We'll get to more of your reaction. And Elias Pettersson plus Ian McIntyre is next. And this is after a 3-2 Canucks loss in overtime against the Minnesota Wild. And this is the Canucks Central postgame show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Dan Riccio.
And Satyar Shah.
Join us for Canucks Central, where we will set up the game and break down the latest around the Canucks.
4 to 6 p.m. and postgame on Sportsnet 650 and wherever you get your podcasts.
This is where you talk Canucks. You're listening to the Canucks Central postgame show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Brännström, right wing for Besser, into the Wild zone, driving wide in front. Brännström is robbed by Gustafsson. What a save. And here come the Wild up ice, 2-on-1. Rossi, right wing, Boldy with him. Rossi trying to pass, broken up by Sherwood. Canucks are back to center. Kiefer Sherwood tied up by Rossi on the back check. He stole the puck from him, and the Wild get it back.
This is the Canucks Central Post Game Show after a 3-2 Canucks loss in Minnesota to close out a six-game road trip. A successful one, though. Canucks pick up 9 points out of a possible 12. And this is the Canucks Central Post Game Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Satyar Shah with Bick Nizar. We are going to get to some of your thoughts in a moment. You can also grab a phone line if you would like. And we'll get to Elias Pettersson's thoughts after this game here tonight. But I did want to spend, you know, we haven't spoken a ton tonight, Bick, about Kevin Lankinen. But, you know, it wasn't this game where he had to stand on his head, but he had to make some critical saves, and especially in that first period. And that's where, you know, we mentioned how the Canucks scored on the power play, but 5-on-5 was really dictated by the Minnesota Wild. And I think Lankinen was a big reason why the Canucks kind of were able to really settle into this game the way they did.
Yeah, he makes a big save early after a Juulsen giveaway that Randy had mentioned earlier on Shore. And, you know, it's that ability just to be there and make yourself big. And he also has a big save on Declan Chisholm as well after Boldy makes a nice, you know, diagonal pass to him for a one-timer. And there's Kevin Lankinen. So it wasn't this overwhelmingly high danger after high danger night, and he's making desperate saves when he's moving, you know, post to post a lot. But the pivotal ones, he was pretty big. And just unlucky on the Middleton goal because it just kind of squirts out in front and it's swept away and it changes the angle. But, you know, overall, like he was solid again.
I think you're right. The save on the Chisholm one-timer from the left circle. Yeah. I mean, initially you see it and it looks like a good save, but then you see the replay. Play and it's like
he's moving just, early, right? Yeah, like he's there well in advance.
Incredible save.
Yeah. No, I remained stunned that he was as available as long as he was, and that, you know, there's plenty of teams looking for goaltending, and he's done this, maybe not to this level and with level of frequency, but he's looked more than NHL capable in his stops in Chicago and Nashville, and then he made a good decision. As Ian McIntyre's detailed with us, he chose Vancouver because he thought there was a pretty good opportunity here, and a show-me contract for a goalie is proven to be pretty astute business for Kevin Lankinen.
Yeah, I mean, he's putting himself in a really, really good position, and we'll see ultimately when Demko does come back. I know Bill from Buffalo texted in, and he's skeptical about Demko coming back even in January. Says, remember, he was supposed to be back against Edmonton in that series. So Bill is skeptical on Thatcher Demko, and I know people are kind of just waiting for him to play. You know, they haven't seen it yet, so they'll believe him when they see it. But it does seem like he is a lot closer to a return, and we'll see if that does indeed happen on the six-game homestand. Lotso says, best loss this season.
That's pretty good.
That's good.
That's pretty strong.
I like that. Best loss of the season. I mean,
it's a clever jokes per 60.
Yeah, I like that. Brandon and Poco, speaking of jokes per 60, Bick was trying to do an Al Murdoch impersonation and says, gee, Al Murdoch does a good Bick impersonation.
No, I was not. I was literally not trying to do an Al Murdoch impression. Who can do an impression of Al? Come on.
Yeah.
It's a goated voice right there.
No, he's absolutely the best. All right. We'll get some more of some of your text messages as the show goes on here, but let's get to what we mentioned, some audio post game. Here is Elias Pettersson after a 3-2 overtime loss in Minnesota.
Well, not the outcome you guys wanted tonight, but to grab a point in this one against the number one team in the league, how'd you feel about the battle from your group?
Yeah, I really liked the battle. I think we, I ran a few minutes in the second period when I think they really had pressure on us. Other than that, I think we really liked our effort. We had, I think we did enough to win, but a few mistakes by our line and me in the D zone that give us, we give up the lead.
You say a couple of mistakes by you. Anything you're just looking maybe more specifically to clean up heading back home?
Yeah, I mean, we have a 2-1 lead, and then their goal. I missed a block, and then when I missed my block, I screened Lankinen to even see the puck. So just small details, but yeah.
Well, on the positive side, with your 2 points tonight, you move into the top 10 all-time for multi-points in Canucks history.
Hey.
What does it mean to hit that marker, to hear that?
Yeah, no, that's pretty cool. I'm honored about it. Yeah, obviously I'm very honored about that, but wouldn't taste better with a win today.
What can you say about Lankinen? Obviously just the season, but tonight it was a duel of both goaltenders.
Yeah, I mean, I know Gus in Minnesota well, and Lankinen's been playing lights out for us all year, I mean, we feel confident with both goals in that, but obviously Lankinen has played really well for us this season.
That's Elias Pettersson, very happy with the play of Lankinen, and obviously been a big part of their success so far this season, and says he's honored to have moved into the top 10 all-time for multi-point games in Canucks history. Two more points here from Pettersson this evening, and now up to 23 points in 24 games, kind of to that goal per game. Again, the goal scoring is not where you want it to be. That can improve and get better, but promising that his game is turning around and he's making a bigger impact.
But a recognition there of mistakes in the D zone, right?
Yeah.
And that's the thing, too. Like when he was struggling, and you know, people make the demands of 11.6, the bar becomes so high, right? And then you see a little bit of the production, and it's a nice stretch of production, don't get me wrong, but suddenly the bar gets lowered and be like, all right, he's back. But here's a guy who's admitting, it's like, dude, like, I made mistakes tonight.
Yeah.
I can be better. And when he's at his best, like, those mistakes don't crop up. He's eating everything up in the defensive zone. He's blocking things in the neutral zone. You know, he plays like a pterodactyl, right? He just like swoops in, takes the puck, and just covers so much ground. It's a tough player to get around when he's at his best defensively. And it's probably about like 80-85% of the way there for me right now. And just that recognition that like, hey, I missed a block and I'm screening my goalie in that spot, and it's a 2-1 lead. We can close that out, but it's kind of on our line and me tonight.
Well, they, you know, obviously we mentioned like he had some good moments too, but not his best game. I thought this was a game, as much as he had 2 points and DeBrus scored, it was how the team as a whole defended in front of their net, how they were able to forecheck really well, and the effort was there. And that's, you know, like somebody texted in solid, like that was what it was, like a real solid overall effort. But it
was to be fair, this texter has sent in solid like 80 times.
I know,
tonight.
I love it. It's great.
So
but
good.
But I think that's where it's at, right? Like it's the way the game got played tonight, the Canucks got some points from their top players, but it wasn't a game led by their top players. This wasn't a game you say, well, Hughes was their best player, Pettersson was their best forward. Like that wasn't the case tonight. And despite that, the Canucks tonight were able to put together a really good team game, and I think that's a positive. That's the
who
thing
was their
I,
best
like,
player tonight? Then
I think Carson Soucy, man. To me, Carson Soucy was the Canucks' best player tonight.
Interesting.
I thought the way he played in his own end, how clean he was in his own end. I thought he was part of some of the goal scoring as well. Right, he was on the ice for the Canucks scoring a couple goals. He got a lot of key shots on. I thought tonight was a night where. Quinn Hughes wasn't able to impose his will offensively, wasn't able to generate much chances going the other way, but Carson Soucy was. Carson Soucy was in the middle of a lot of the scoring chances the Canucks had tonight. He was on for a goal four, none against, five on five. Defensively, not a lot happened when he was on his own end, only one high danger chance against. I thought he boxed out well. I thought he played a really hard and physical too, and he was smiling the whole time, which I always love about him. He's back to kind of feeling good about his game. So
you know what?
That's what I think. I think to me, Carson Soucy tonight was the Canucks' best player.
Yeah, you know what? You might convince me. I might have gone Connor Garland.
Yeah, I mean, you could put, I mean, sure.
Patterson's probably third, but again, there was some gaps there. All right. I'm with you.
Yeah, I mean,
Carson Soucy, you talked me into it.
Yeah, I just really like what he brought tonight. And this is a player that we talked about throughout the beginning parts of the season, and his game has suffered. And I know people were texting, and he got away from Myers. That's why he's playing better. And, you know, but at the same time, we saw him play well with Myers last year, right? So it's not, to me, it's not necessarily something that goes hand in hand.
There's a real player in there, like a real 4-5 D-man in there. And that's what it was like. It was so strange. The first 20 games of the season, because he wasn't even playing like a six. He looked like a shadow of what we saw last season. And you know, he was a pivotal part of their success last year. And I know there's always, you know, texts and calls for Zadorov. And you know, we've talked about this, that there would be highs with Zadorov, but there would also be lows. And Carson Soucy was always just in the middle, right? You were always getting, I'll use his jersey number, you're always getting a 7 out of 10, basically.
Right.
Right? He was the consistent steakhouse that always just has the same steak. And from time to time, yeah, there would be a goal here, but there wasn't a lot of mistakes. And that tonight's performance felt like last year, all of a sudden, for Carson Soucy, where it felt like a legitimate second-pairing D-man all of a sudden.
Yeah, and I really hope he's able to build on this and keep doing more, because he was a guy the team leaned on massively. So, yeah, he actually led all Canucks Bick in 5-on-5 ice time tonight, 19-33.
There you go.
19-19 for Quinn Hughes. Right. So, I mean, this is a guy who had
he was rewarded in kind, yeah.
He really was, right? And he only had 22% of his starts, offensive zone starts, only 22%. He had 7 defensive zone faceoffs.
Wow.
Which was more than any other Canuck tonight. So, I mean, high degree of difficulty. And he came up in a big, big way. And he's a player who's played in Minnesota before, of course, right? So maybe, you know, coming back to some familiar roots brought the best out of him. But I thought this was easily his best game of the season.
Yeah, fair enough. All right. I'm pro Carson Soucy in general. So that was a pretty strong game from him.
All right, let's bring in the man we call the triple threat. You watch him on TV, you read him on digital, you're about to hear him on radio. He is Ian McIntyre.
I think Carson Soucy, paired with Noah Juulsen, posted expected goals at 5-on-5 of 70% tonight, Vic.
Yeah,
that's pretty good.
Yeah, well, that's awesome.
And the reason I think that is because I looked at natural stat trick.
Okay.
So, I'm really not that smart, but it seems to me that Soucy has found his game a little bit on this road trip, and I don't know if it's just a freshness and maybe a sharper focus once he was separated from Tyler Myers, which happened at the start of the trip in Ottawa, which, man, seems like a month ago that they played that game. But I think he's playing his best hockey so far and looking, as I say, like the player we saw most of last season. And Noah Juulsen is playing really well. And this is obviously important because Philip Roenick is missing. The team will continue, I'm sure, to look to see what value is out there as far as trying to add another defenseman. They've been looking since the season started. There's probably a greater urgency now, especially with the announcement that Roenick's going to be out 8 weeks. But the longer management can wait to make a deal, the more cap space they'll accrue and the higher quality of player they may be able to add. So if this defense, the way it's constructed now, can kind of play with the efficiency and manage the risk like they did tonight, it's extremely important for the Canucks for the next 8 weeks.
Well, because in a game like this tonight, and Quinn Hughes has been so tremendous for this team, but he definitely wasn't the Canucks' best defenseman tonight, maybe not even their second best defenseman, and yet they had one of their better overall team defensive performances, which I think is a big testament to their team effort tonight.
Yeah, I think actually this was this was their best game of the road trip, but they were also playing by far the strongest opponent of the road trip. But I thought it was a terrific game. I thought this game and that one in Ottawa for the first 55 minutes before the Senators scored twice, I think once on the power play and once with the goalie out 6-5, very late in the third period. I thought these two games were the nearest the Canucks have looked to that 5,109 point team. Now, the last time I was talking about them looking so similar to last year's team was when they came off that California trip, and then they fell on their faces on home ice. So the obviously the challenge now is to bring this home with them, to play with the same consistent intensity, the same pace, the same efficiency with the puck, you know, not just handing out outnumbered rushes, making the other team earn it. They have to do that at home, right? They can't, there's no way that this season's going to be a success by any measure unless they find a way to play better at home. So that's going to be the challenge starting on Friday.
Just in general, like I might even say that this is their best game of the season, despite it being a loss.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't argue with you, Bick. I'd have to, you know, the Ottawa game, they were very good, but the opponent wasn't anywhere near what the Wild are. And especially tonight, there was that nice edginess to the game. There was playoff officiating from Kelly Sutherland in overtime.
Do you have any, like, I think we generally do a good job on the show, I was saying this earlier, of being fair and be like, okay, I can understand what the officials, like, do you have any justification for what happened on that tripping call?
No, I don't.
It was so bizarre.
And listen, I think we all understand that there are calls that go for you, there are calls that go against you. I mean, I have very little sympathy for Joel Eriksson Ek because he's such an abrasive player. He's in everybody's grill every game. But I'm sure the Wild thought that was a cross-check on Tyler Myers against Eriksson Ek in the third period in front of the net. So I think we all get it, that this is part of the NHL. And, you know, there's talking points every game on the officiating. And cliche as it sounds, it is by far the hardest game to officiate because of the speed and the flow, and there's not, you know, the stop and go chance to review things. But I think on a non-call like that, I don't think it does the league any good. You know, anybody who doesn't have a vested interest in this game, in other words, if you're not a fan of the Wild and not a fan of the Canucks, you watch that and think, how can that not be a penalty? Like, what is the referee thinking there? And so I think things like that reinforce this idea that somehow these terrible calls or non-calls that occur, oh, well, you just shrug. It's like an act of nature. And I don't think it has to be that way, right? How do you compel the league and officials to be better if you take that attitude?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, you know, these things happen. But in that particular case, I don't know. And the NHL is in the dark ages as well as far as media access generally,
yeah.
But especially the zero access to officials, like not even what in journalism we would call the pool reporter, can go in and ask for clarity on any call, but ask for clarity and then share that answer. So at least there is some sort of statement from a referee of why he called something or didn't call something. But, you know, that kind of a non-call is just sort of bewildering. You have no idea what Kelly Sutherland was thinking. And Kelly, listen, for all the sketchy history he has regarding the Canucks, and I'm not sure that I, off the top of my head, can think of a worse call than the one he made on Daniel Sedin in overtime a decade ago in San Jose from 150 feet away. And I'm not sure how much Kelly worked after that in the playoffs. Maybe he did, but I seem to recall we didn't see a whole lot of games beyond that round. But this guy's worked 10 Stanley Cup finals. He is one of the NHL's best referees. I would just like to know what he thought on a decision like that.
Yeah, I'd like to see the NHL make officials available for comment, but you know that's a different conversation for a different day. And you know,
continue that, because I've been writing, you guys have been taking calls and responses. how in the hierarchy of talking points from this game, how much are people talking about that non-call?
First or second?
Yeah, I mean, it's when we first started the post-game show, we had tons of text messages about it. We had people calling in angry about it, ranting
about
it. Not
blaming the game on like the result on the officials, just astounded at how egregious the misses were.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm glad to hear that in a way, the second part, because that, I mean, it didn't quote unquote cost them the game. What cost them the game, if you're looking about how it was decided in overtime, is that Brock Besser hit a post on a breakaway, and because Pugh Suter was following up for a rebound, and then the puck unluckily didn't bounce back to them, it bounced away, and now Minnesota's got a 2-on-1, and two of their players perfectly executed 2-on-1 against Quinn Hughes, the Norris Trophy winner, and maybe going to be the Norris Trophy favorite this season. We'll see. But against inarguably one of the best defensemen in the world, they passed the puck across him, and Kaprizov buried a shot. That's why they lost the game. But it's still, for people who love the game, you still look at calls or non-calls like that and just think, well, What are we doing here? Like, why are these guys out? Why is there a rule book if that possibly isn't a penalty?
Yeah, and I think those are, you know, it's stuff that is bewildering and the inconsistency of it. And I think the other, I mean, on that point, I'm glad to see that Kiefer Sherwood's okay after taking that high hit from Joel Eriksson-Ek, because it's very clearly a forearm at the very least, if not an elbow, to Sherwood's head. And give Sherwood credit, he bounces back up, right? He actually gets the clear and, you know, continues on in the game. But if Sherwood is injured, we're having a different conversation tonight about a head injury and a headshot.
Yeah, and I just, you know, the NHL, despite what people think, they review everything. Like, they'll internally, they review all the referees' decisions. So, you know, for people who are hating on Kelly Sutherland, maybe he won't get his 11th final. But this is one game out of 82,
yeah.
And for those guys, the season's even longer than what it is for the players. But they will review that hit. And maybe there's a fine. I suspect not, but there could be a fine. I don't think there will be a suspension. But yeah, it was a dangerous hit. But again, and you know, I've voiced some NHL code. What's the term I'm looking for?
The unwritten code.
The code. The unwritten code.
Right.
Some of the NHL code by saying, you know, I have no sympathy for a player like Joel Eriksson-Ek because of the way he plays. You have to remember, the rest of the league has no sympathy for Kiefer Sherwood for the way he plays.
Right.
But it doesn't change the fact that it was potentially a dangerous hit, and it looked at the time like it should have been a penalty, but hey, it's the NHL.
On a whole, what's the most encouraging part of this road trip for you? Is it the 9 points? Is it just the fact that it looks like, hey, there's a Pettersson-DeBrus combination going here that's developed and materializing? Is it something else entirely? When you reflect on the 6 games, what's the takeaway here?
Well, I'd say on an individual basis, if you're looking at players, it's obviously vitally important that Elias Pettersson has started to be the player that he should be and was exceptional on this road trip. I thought he was terrific again tonight, even though he finished -1. And I saw a post game, he tried to take the blame, some of the blame on the tying goal. And the fact, you know, that DeBrusk is playing with him, if Pettersson's going to play that way, then DeBrusk or anybody else playing there is going to get a lot of chances. But DeBrusk, certainly the fact he kind of was the player that they thought they were getting when they signed him. You know, really smart guy, really good around the net, plays a heavy game, even though he's not physical like Sherwood, but he's always around the net. And he finds a way to get to pucks when he's around the net. So individually, you know, that was the best thing. To me, sort of a bigger picture thing is that a road trip that started without JT Miller and ended without Philip Ronick, still saw the Canucks, to a large degree, find their identity and play to their identity and start to string together games. I mean, the Pittsburgh game wasn't great. The third period in Boston wasn't great, but that was, you know, a pretty big push from the Bruins. But they were, you know, they were really good in Ottawa. They shut out the Bruins in Boston. I thought for the most part, they were really good in Detroit. They were good for most of the game in Buffalo, and they were really good for most of the game tonight. And I thought the third period was their best. The fact that even missing those key players because of the strength of the structure, it illustrated that you can still be successful without that. That if you play this way that Rick Tocchet wants them to play, and you execute efficiently. I hate to keep using that word and sounding like a coach, but
you need a thesaurus.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. I need a better vocabulary. You're so vituperative sometimes.
Oh, honestly. Incredible.
Yes. But I thought that was the most positive thing from a big picture team standpoint, what this means for the final, what do they have? 56 games to go. This was game 25,
58,
50 game.
No, wait, this is game 24. This is game 24.
All right. All right. See, I'm not so good on vocabulary, not so good on arithmetic sometimes. But anyways, I thought that was the most positive takeaway, is that they kind of found their identity a little bit on this trip, despite missing some of the most important individual players to that identity.
Yeah.
They still were able to find themselves on this trip and play the way that they need to play. And hopefully they can now transport that home and be the same team on home ice. It should be pretty compelling reinforcement for them.
Yeah.
About when they play the way that they're instructed to play and take care of the puck and are skating and are physical and are in the way of the opposition, protecting the front of their net, going hard to the front of the opposition's net, and, you know, gapping up in the neutral zone so it's hard for the other team to come down the ice on you. They do all those things. They're a very difficult team to beat no matter who's in the lineup.
Yeah, and perhaps we'll see Thatcher Demko back on his homestand and maybe even JT Miller, but we'll see how that all goes. But IMAC, great stuff as always. I can't wait to read your latest on Sportsnet.ca after a thrilling overtime loss by the Canucks in Minnesota to close out their road trip.
Yeah, it was a great game.
Yeah.
For anyone who loves hockey, even with the talking points, it's never dull, but when is it ever dull around the Canucks? But it was a great game. And hopefully we see a bunch of them at home as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Ian, thanks so much. And I look forward to seeing you at the rink on Friday.
I'll look forward to that. And I'll look forward to seeing you guys in the Jim Robson gondola after
yes.
the game.
Yes. And, you know, get to make sure to bypass all the traffic because all the Taylor Swift stuff's happening on Friday, too. So it's going to be a bit of a nightmare getting to the rink. So plan accordingly for Friday.
All right. I may not be able to drive you home that game.
No, well, we may have to take transit back or take...
Do you have tickets to the concert? Is that why?
Yeah, I'm calling in sick to Sportsnet.
Yeah.
And then I'll be in people's concert videos up at the front. I may go up on stage and dance.
Yeah, exactly, there you go.
That's how I roll.
Yeah, that's how I roll. That's exactly how I envision a Friday night for Ian McIntyre, hanging out with Taylor Swift on stage. That's going to be a lot of fun.
Well, we're all Swifties. We are all Swifties.
It certainly seems that way. Thanks, Ian.
Good night, guys.
Good night. That is Ian McIntyre. Make sure to read his latest on sportsnet.ca. And I think that gets us to the end of the show. And we appreciate every single one of you for texting in, listening, calling in, participating. Always a lot of fun. And yeah, it wasn't the result that people wanted, but the Canucks got a point, fought well, and hopefully they can, you know, build on this homestand, Vic. And tomorrow, what do you have on the People Show?
Tomorrow, kind of a shortened show because the Four Nations Canadian rosters will be announced at 3:30. So we're going to carry that live.
Okay.
So we'll be able to instantly react to what the breakdown is for Team Canada come February for the Four Nations.
That's going to be fun. I'll be back on Canuck Central with Dan Riccio tomorrow. from 4 to 6. We have Kevin Woodley joining us, plus overrated, underrated, a lot of fun as always. And special thanks to Fast Eddie Gregory producing the show and all of you for listening. This has been the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.